It's just about 3 o'clock, and you're listening to KTOO News in Juneau. This is Annie Bartholomew, your host for a Juneau afternoon today. On today's program, we'll hear about Saturday's 7th Annual Food Festival at the Jack. Pam Leary of the Juneau Skating Club will be here to tell us about free skating lessons this Friday. We'll talk about the Capital City Brewfest at the Jack on September 13th. John Bennett of the Alaska Center for Family Resources will be here on the show to talk about the state of foster care in Southeast Alaska. And Andy Klein will be here to talk about the Alaskan Brewery's new pumpkin porter. That are Writer's Almanac, Music, and More here on KTOO. Today's forecast calls for mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Highs around 58, and tonight mostly cloudy, scattered showers, patchy fog late. Next is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Attorneys argued on behalf of Yupik fishermen Tuesday before the Alaska Court of Appeals. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more about their case.
Attorney James Davis with the Northern Justice Project represented the fishermen.
The primary issue before this court is whether the state of Alaska had a duty under the Free Exercise Clause to accommodate the Yupik fishers' spiritual practices under the Frank versus State case and its progeny, and whether, in fact, the state did so. We submit that the state had a duty, but failed to comply with that duty.
Due to a reduced run of king salmon, the state closed the lower Kuskokwim River subsistence fishery in June 2012. Dozens of people fished in defiance of the state closure. Many were given fines, and some nets were confiscated. The trial court agreed that king salmon fishing is integral to the Yupik religion, but convicted the fishermen. 13 decided to pursue an appeal. Laura Fox with the State Attorney General's Office argued that issuing citations for fishing during an emergency closure was needed to protect king salmon.
There was never any harvestable surplus of kings in 2012, and at the end of the day, the state missed the escapement objective by 50,000 fish.
The ACLU, the Association of Village Council Presidents, and the Alaska Federation of Natives have filed amicus briefs in the case. Julie Kitka, president of AFN, says AFN supports the Yupik fishermen.
Their spirituality and their beliefs are a core part of who they are and with everything that they do, how they treat their parents, how they treat their children, how they treat their neighbors, how they treat food sources and nature and animals that give themselves up to them.
A panel of three judges will weigh the arguments in the case and issue a decision likely sometime later this year or early next year. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper has rejected growing calls for a national investigation into the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Native leaders say the issue and the need for an inquiry was given urgency after the death earlier this month of a 15-year-old First Nations girl. Tina Fontaine's body was found wrapped in a bag and dumped in the Red River in Winnipeg. The girl had been in Winnipeg for less than a month when she ran away from a foster home. Despite renewed calls for a public inquiry, Prime Minister Stephen Harper says cases such as Fontaine should be investigated by police as serious crimes and not be seen as a sociological problem. And the Justice Minister says the country does not need another study on top of the already 40 that have already been conducted. Ghislaine Picard is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations.
We have close to 1,200 women and girls in the Aboriginal community that went missing or were murdered over the last 30 years. If that's not a fact, that should warrant a national inquiry.
Picard says the provinces could also move forward on their own with programs to address the issue. Several provinces, including Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario, have spoken out recently calling for the Harper government to change its position. Another proposal includes the call for a federal-provincial roundtable that would bring government ministers together to discuss those issues affecting Aboriginal people. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Dakota Language Revitalization and Appreciation Day is being recognized in South Dakota today. That's Tammy Dakota introducing herself in her native language. She's with the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate Tribes Language Institute.
Our language is intertwined with our culture, and in order to bring either one forward, we have to learn and practice both. And even if you only know one word, use that one word.
The day was proclaimed by the state's governor and recognizes Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by the National Indian Education Association, an inclusive Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. Membership registration available at NIEA.org.
Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at NativeVote.org, brought to you by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here with Rachel Usler, the rental director of the Jack, here to talk about the 7th Annual Food Festival.
Hi, how are you?
Great, and yourself?
I'm doing wonderfully. I'm pulling all this stuff together.
A lot of
final stuff. Little event of the season.
So this is the end of the season for you guys.
End of the season. We've finished up Food Truck Fridays last week, and now we're going to go directly into our Farmers Market and Local Food Festival, which will happen on Saturday from 9 to 2.
What elements are you combining from the two?
Well, basically, it's kind of like a public market. It's kind of takes the place of the Sunday markets in the past and Food Truck Fridays kind of all gathered around. But it's more based onto a farmer's market and really dealing with local produce and foods. This is where you get local produce for the year, actually.
For the entire year?
Well, pretty much. Have you seen any other local produce anyway?
Not much. So who are you expecting? How many vendors?
Actually, we looks like we have close to 32, 35 vendors or so. We have quite a really nice lineup this year. We have a lot of informational booths. We have the UAF Cooperative Extension Service will be there, Southeast Soil and Water Conservation. We've got a bunch of produce sort of things. We have the fun guy who comes up from, where's Ketchikan, maybe? Don't quote me on that one, but it's Mark Cozy. He comes up with all of his mushrooms and all of his foraging product sort of information stuff. We've got Orsi Organic Produce that's going to be coming, showing up. We have Pinky's Fish Market that's going to come out from the valley. And I know she really wanted to try to make some of our Food Truck Fridays, and she couldn't quite do it all this summer, so she's going to be showing up for this one for sure. We have Ed's Edible Landscaping. He will be there. Root Cellar Farm will also be there. Let's see, for other food, we also have tons of jams and jellies and jams and pies and pottery. We have Misty Vinzant. I know she makes some great spruce tip things. We actually pulled in the other day. We had the Cocoa Diva showed up to our Food Truck Friday.
The Cocoa Diva?
Yes, and she made these amazing handmade truffles, and she's out of Gustavus with all natural or foraged ingredients that she uses, and so we talked her into showing up for this one, too. We have Riverside Herbs, Bonnie, who does her oils and vinegars and different things like that. Alaska Botanicals, it looks like they do herbal salves and teas. Get Growing, who's been doing a bunch of fertilizers and different things, so they will be there. And then we actually will have a mushroom ID out in the front. We'll have a tent outside, so if you have any foraged mushrooms or if you just want to talk about doing some foraging, we will have a mushroom ID station set out up front. And then we have just a lot of products. We have pretty much handmade products. We've got let's see, we have Alaskan Fire, we have James Bulker's Pottery, we have a bunch of food that's going to be there, we have Breezy Street, they're going to be doing a whole bunch of baking of different things, so we'll actually have food, we have Monique's, she'll be cooking some tacos in the front lawn, and then for us, we'll have Slick Rick that's actually going to be roasting a pig.
On-site?
Oh, yes, on-site.
How did they do that?
Well, he's going to be there early in the morning because it does run from 9 to 2. So this is more of a lunch thing rather than a dinner thing. So he will show up very early in the morning and start roasting the pig. And
where did he get the pig from? Did they ship it in?
We go through Super Bear. Okay. Yes, so you have our local grocer. If you ever need a pig in town, that's who you call. And Slick Rick, that's who you call to cook it for you.
Slick Rick?
Yes. And so he'll be set up, and I think I'm going to actually open the bay door. doors in the very back of the room, and so he'll just be right there, and so everything will be in the main hall. So we won't have to be outside like we do with the Food Truck Fridays. We're actually moving, shifting back inside for this final one. And then the weather will probably be gorgeous.
It's Juno.
It totally is. And besides all of the informational and the foods and all the produce that we're having, we also have pretty much all of the garden communities will be showing up and having different tables. We have the Juno Community Garden, the Douglas Community Garden. Juno Rotary will be selling their bulbs there. The Juno Garden Club will be showing up. And then we have a bunch of informational Big Brothers, Big Sisters, a few other people like that will be running around, just going with extra, keeping things local with Juno. And, yeah, I think it's going to be a really good time.
How's it going to be different from last year?
Well, let's see. We're going to shift things up a little bit. What was last year? Last year just seemed to go so quickly. We never had a pig last year, and we didn't really have that much actual physical eating food. Now we actually do have Pucker Wilson's in the front yard all the time, so he will be there too. So we are concentrating more on food than we have in the past, basically.
What are you most excited about?
The pig.
Which vendor? The pig?
No, I'm really actually excited to see all the vegetable growers. It's really been kind of a difficult growing season, it seems like, for a lot of them. And it will be really nice to actually get them all into town, all into one room, instead of, like, wandering around going, oh, is someone going to show up at this market one day or anything like that? We'll actually have them all there.
So this is the who's who's of Juno Gardeners.
Basically, it is, yeah.
And I actually do
have two extra tables left. We're pretty packed, but if anyone does have any extra, like, last-minute stuff and they can pull it together by Saturday, just go ahead and give me a call. We're down at the Jack. It's wwjahc.org, or you can just call me at 586-ARTS.
Great. And is there going to be any kind of entertainment or games for children?
Buskers are welcome.
Buskers are welcome?
Yes, please.
It's kind of a dangerous opportunity.
Yeah. It can be. But, you know, it's early in the morning. Who's going to be that obnoxious?
I don't know.
But, yeah, we definitely do need buskers. We have had music in the past. And this year we had more vendors than we had room to put a stage inside. So we didn't really do a whole big music showcase for this one. This one's more going to be not focusing on music as much as food.
All about the food.
All about the food.
And what time is it again?
It's from 9 to 2 on Saturday.
Great.
Oh, down at the Jack.
Down at the Jack. Juno Farmers Market and Local Food Festival this Saturday.
And if you need any more information, wwjahc.org.
Great. And here's Red Beans and Rice.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Is Bird Note. The burrowing owl's vocal abilities have raised eyebrows among birders and scientists alike. Because as well as its double hoots and other calls, the burrowing owl is known for this hair-raising sound. Standing on almost comically long legs, this yellow-eyed owl is very active in daytime, and its hissing habit may have evolved to mimic the sibilant warning given by a cornered rattlesnake. This sonic threat of a venomous reptile could be just enough to warn away most unwanted visitors from the owl's nest burrow. In one experiment, ground squirrels were nearly as alarmed by the burrowing owl's hiss as they were by the recording of a real rattlesnake, like this one. Despite its name, the burrowing owl doesn't do much digging, though. Instead, it's more of a squatter, nesting and roosting in vacant rodent burrows, often those of prairie dogs, until it's time to eat. Not content with providing the burrowing owl's accommodation, rodents, especially mice, also provide lunch. Well, they are lunch, with a side of large insects. Before the burrowing owl retires again to its mostly subterranean life.
Every time I sing this song, I hope it's the last time. So says the poet in the opening moments of Perseverance Theater's An Iliad. This grand tale of the Trojan War comes roaring to life in a contemporary new telling and becomes breathtakingly relevant. Boston Christopher takes on the role of the poet who, along with live music by Lucy Peckham, unleashes this thrilling tale about our unshakable attraction to violence. An Iliad opens September 5th. For more information and tickets, visit ptalaska.org or call 463-TIXS.
This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here in the studio with Pam Leary of the Juno Skating Club. How are you, Pam?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Great. Can you tell me more about the Juno Skating Club and some upcoming events you have? I know you've got some exciting shows lined up.
We do. So the Juno Skating Club actually started out and is primarily a learn-to-skate program, which we call Basic Skills. It is a program registered with U.S. Figure Skating. It's a skill-based program based on progressively more difficult moves that are taught at different levels. So we start with learning how to fall on the ice and then learning how to take little steps. And we teach group lessons to kids that are 4 years old to kids that are 90 years old or plus. We haven't had somebody who's 90 yet take lessons, but we're hoping because it's a great form of exercise. But we certainly have a lot of adults skating, both last year and we're hoping for this year.
And how do most people find out about it? Have they had like a lifelong interest in skating or have just dabbled on Twin Lakes? Or?
Well, I think since we have had a rink now for about 12 years, people know about the rink, although it always amazes me to find out that people don't still know that we have an ice skating rink. So we do a lot of outreach programs like coming on K2, and we send flyers to schools to let them know about programs, and so does the rink. Treadwell Arena and the city reach out to as many people as possible to get them to just to come to open skates, maybe take some lessons with Juno Skating Club, which will then turn into maybe hockey or figure skating.
Do you have a lot of men and women who participate in both?
We do. Well, at the Juno Skating Club, because we teach mostly in the basic skills program, basic lessons, we have a big mix. What we tend to find is as students, primarily youth, go up through the levels, the boys tend to go play hockey more, although there are a lot of girls that are playing hockey now. And the figure skating program, which is also under Juno Skating Club, tends to get mostly girls. We've had a couple of boys, but they haven't really stuck, and we're hoping to get more because it's a great sport, and there's so many different venues that they can go in terms of they can do dance, ice dance, or even pair skating, so as couples, in addition to individual skating.
So the ice dancing, that's one of the more advanced skills?
Well, you have to kind of get through all the basic skills before you can start doing the dance patterns. But we actually have quite a number of figure skaters that are starting to test through the dance programs. We have quite a number of adults. We would love to have some more men dancers skate because we would like to see our skaters partner more. But, it's a really fun thing, and it's something that you can do that doesn't have as much of the impact that, like, jumping does for figure skaters. So it's a lesser impact area of figure skating.
So if people want to learn how to skate through your program, where should they start?
Well, let's talk about the free event on August 29th, which is this Friday. We have free lessons with the Juno Skating Club. It's from 5:45 to 6:45. There'll be coaches like myself there that can take you through just a couple of basic things to see how we teach and see if you're interested in taking lessons. We have four sessions throughout the year, two before the holidays, two after the holidays. They're six-week sessions. You can register for those on our website. There's six lessons per session, I should say. And it's either on Friday nights or Saturday midday. And so if you come on Friday, you can sign up for lessons or find out how to sign up for lessons. And you can get a little taste of what lessons will be like, which will be a lot of fun. And then for youth skaters returning that have passed levels 1 and 2, we're going to have a beginning synchro clinic. So that's
wow.
A really fun thing that we have an adult synchro group and a youth synchro group. And they're teams. And it's kind of like if you've seen synchronized swimming. It's synchronized skating, and it's great fun. And so on September 5th, which is a week from Friday, from 5:15 to 6:15, we're going to have a beginning synchro clinic for those who have passed level 2 in basic skills up and who are working up through basic 8. So we're going to try to have like even another team of skaters at the beginning levels, which would be really fun. So I encourage anybody who is at that level, youth, past basic skills 2, to come to that clinic. We're also going to have a dress and skate sale during that time. So it's not this Friday, but the following Friday.
So costumes and stuff?
Yep, skating dresses and skates and tights and stuff like that. So this Friday is for everybody, free lessons, and the next Friday is for the skaters for a beginning synchro clinic. And then actually the rink has a day of play, which is on September 13th, which is coming up. And a lot of our coaches will be out there helping to teach some lessons during that, as well as we'll have performances of some of our figure skaters that are going to go to the regional competition in Wenatchee, Washington, in early October. So that's really exciting. And it's kind of fun for kids who are just learning how to skate to see what their skating can take them to. So they'll be doing 1.5 minute to 3 minute programs, depending upon the level. So it'll be a lot of fun.
So if people want to come on Friday, what kind of experience do they even need to know? Like to be able to fall, or should they even have skates?
No, because they rent skates at the rink. And I believe that will be free of charge. They need to know nothing, just have a good attitude and a willingness to learn and have some fun. We'll go through all the basics, and if they've never been on the ice before, that's great. We'll walk them out, and we'll try to make sure that they're not too scared, because sometimes it's a really scary experience to go on something that slippery if you've never done it before. We'll just take it from there.
And if people want to learn more about the Juno Skating Club, how can they do that?
Well, we have a brand new website that we're showing. It's www.junoskatingclub.org. And there are pages for basic skills, there are pages for figure skating, and a lot of the events that we put on. We actually know that our holiday figure skating recital is going to be December 7th this year. We have a competition for basic skills and figure skating the week of February 21st, 22nd. And our annual spring recital is going to be April 11th this year. So all of that information is on the website as well as our registration page. So you can just go to the web, which is www.junoskatingclub.org, and go to the registration page and sign up.
Great. And what time should they show up on Friday?
Well, just enough time to get their skates on. So it starts at 5:45, so I would say 5:30 for sure. And if you get there a little bit before 5:30, the Juno Skating Club figure skaters are going to be skating on the ice. So if you have an interest in just watching figure skaters and seeing kind of what that's about, you could come a little bit earlier as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. And where are you guys located?
Well, we're at the Treadwell Arena down in Douglas near Savico Park.
Excellent. Up next is the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 27th of August, 2014. It's the birthday of C.S. Forrester, born Cairo, Egypt, 1899, created the character Horatio Hornblower, wrote many books about him, and also The African Queen, came out in 1935. C.S. Forrester, who said, "A man who writes for a living does not have to go anywhere in particular, and he could rarely afford to if he wanted." It's the birthday of Theodore Dreiser, born Terre Haute, Indiana, 1871, grew up poor, 10 children in the family involved in many scandals, adultery and unwanted pregnancies, jail time, alcoholism. He ran away when he was 16, went off to Chicago with a change of underwear and socks and a few dollars, went to Indiana State College in Bloomington. His old English teacher, Mildred Fielding, gave him the money to do that. Found work as a reporter, became a writer. He had never written fiction before the fall of 1899, when he set out to write a novel, and he wrote Sister Carrie, based on the scandal of one of his sisters. 1955, on this day, the first edition of the Guinness Book of World Records came out. The idea came from Sir Hugh Beaver, who was the managing director of Guinness Brewery. He was hunting birds in Ireland, took a shot at a golden plover, missed, wondered whether it was the fastest game bird, and thought maybe there should be a book that would answer questions like this, and maybe Guinness Breweries should be the one to publish it. He found two brothers, Norris and Ross McWhirter, who were sports journalists and who had a head for facts. And they set out to find the records that Guinness was looking for, who was the fastest, the longest, the tallest, the biggest, and so forth. And they discovered when it came to experts that people might not offer you information, but if you gave them wrong information, they would be happy to correct you. And that was how they started putting the book together. It's the birthday of Hegel, Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, born in Stuttgart, 1770, who came up with the concept of dialectic, the idea that all human progress is driven by the conflict between opposites, that each political movement is imperfect and so gives rise to a counter-movement, which is also imperfect and therefore gives rise to yet another, and so on. And it's the birthday of the man whom Stephen King once called the Swiss watchmaker of suspense novels. Ira Levin, born New York City, 1929, author of A Kiss Before Dying, The Stepford Wives, The Boys from Brazil, and Rosemary's Baby. His play Death Trap ran for nearly 1,800 performances on Broadway. Here's a poem for today by Jane Kenyon, Coming Home at Twilight in Late Summer. We turned into the drive, and gravel flew up from the tires like sparks from a fire. So much to be done, the unpacking, the mail and papers, the grass needed mowing. We climbed stiffly out of the car. The shut-off engine ticked as it cooled. And then we noticed the pear tree, the limbs so heavy with fruit they nearly touched the ground. We went out to the meadow, our steps made black holes in the grass, and we each took a pear and ate and were grateful. Jane Kenyon's poem, Coming Home at Twilight in Late Summer, from Collected Poems, published by Grey Wolf Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming support comes from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, in the studio with John Blasco and Andy Mills, here to talk about the Capital City Brewfest.
Yes, we are. Very excited to have our third annual Brewfest coming up Saturday, September 13th.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, well, tell me more about the Brewfest. Is it all about just beer? Is there going to be food vendors? Or I hope people are going to have something to eat there.
Yeah. It's a great event. It's our third one. We have more breweries this year coming, 10 from the state of Alaska, plus the three distributors. And then we'll have some hot food vendors and three live bands going.
Three live bands?
Yep. So it goes from 1 to 5. So it's a full afternoon of great beer tasting and entertainment.
Yeah. Let's see. C. Scott Fry, I think, will be kicking us off.
Excellent.
And I believe Susu and the Prophets might be our second
band. Shona Strouser.
Yeah. And then rounding it out at the end, last year, Darren came by, DNR, and they played the band out on the third band up on stage. And it was
a good classic rock band.
It was a lot of fun, actually, yeah.
Right on. So have you sold out yet? I mean, you did last year, right?
We haven't sold out yet, but we did sell out the last 2 years that we've held this event, so we're expecting to. We're hoping to. Tickets are on sale right now at capbrewfest.com, so definitely people should get them. They're $30 a ticket.
You can always see it ramping up as we get closer to the event, and it just kind of snowballs into the day of the event.
So which breweries are going to be there?
Oh.
I think the number one that we're really excited about this year, and it's a new addition, is Arcos, which is a brewery out of Palmer. They don't actually pour beer out of Palmer, so this is certainly an opportunity to see.
What do you mean
brewery.
They don't pour beer out of Palmer?
So they don't. They apparently don't sell anything here in Juneau.
They're
just like a brewery that sort of serves in
like a
Palmer.
Tap room or?
Yeah, and so it'll be a fun opportunity for everyone here to try something probably most folks have not. And also in that same vein is also Hoodoo from Fairbanks, which came last year. And Bobby was really great. He had a whole lot of fun. He actually underestimated the event and ran out of beer about 3 hours in. And so he won't be making that mistake this year. He knows how much to bring.
Is he bringing his Kolsch?
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, they haven't confirmed all their beers yet, and sometimes it's subject to change. But we always put a beer list in the program. So, but Baranoff Island is coming again, Haynes Brewing, of course, Alaskan Brewing, our hometown, and Marcy and Jeff out there have been great, and the whole Alaskan crew. They've really been supportive of our event, and we appreciate it. But Kenai Brewing, Broken Tooth, Midnight Sun, Denali Brewing, Glacier Brewhouse, we have a lot of those folks represented, and then the distributors, Odom, K&L, and Specialty Imports. Those three bring over half the beer, and those are beers from all over the world. So.
Now, is this an event for people who know a lot about beer, or would, like my mom, want to come to it, who may not have as much experience?
You know, I've learned over the last 2 years, it's everybody. You know, it's the people that really, the home brewers, kind of, you know, people that know a lot about beers that come, and then the people that like beer but don't know. And so you actually can ask the breweries themselves, you know, questions about it, taste it, and, you know, you're going to get a small little, you know, about a 4-ounce glass that they'll fill up with about 2 ounces of each taste, so you'll get to really sift it and taste it. No, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be a connoisseur. Just come and try them.
We have everything from, like, banana bread beers.
Who's making that?
That's one of the ones that Specialty Imports brings, I think. And there's gluten-free beers. There's all sorts of interesting flavors. But if you want to get more complex and maybe you brew your own beer, you can sit there and talk to the brewer who makes the beer on most of these stations and find out what goes into it, what subtle flavors should you notice, how should you drink this. It gets kind of fun when you get to that level of detail and you kind of know a thing or two about brewing yourself.
Are you guys there yet?
To brew it? I wish, but no.
I have a starter kit I haven't tried yet.
Nothing wrong?
No, nothing.
So how many beers are going to be represented there?
You know, last year I think we were about 65, and we're hoping with the addition of a couple breweries this year that we're over 70 this year. We'll see. Like Andy said, it'll change, but 60 to 70 for sure. So.
And then always the Spinning Pig is going to be there serving what they serve and have the last 2 years. And then also Flaming Hibiscus, which is a fairly new food truck that does Polynesian, Tongan, and Samoan. We're pretty excited about that addition, too. So between the food, the bands, and a selection of beer, it should be a pretty fun event.
And this isn't just about beer, right? It's a fundraiser.
That's why we say you can drink beer for charity. It's probably the only time you get to in Juneau. But the Rotary Club of Juneau is putting it on, and obviously we're a community organization, so it's a fundraiser for us. But also we have a charity partner this year. We're very excited to be working with the United Way of Southeast, and we're going to do a focus on education. You know, it's Rotary is very concerned about literacy and education, so United Ways can partner with us, and they have a big reach around Juneau with different agencies that we'll be able to support through this event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's the umbrella organization that is United Way, and the efforts of 1.2 million Rotarians around the world. This event, this fundraiser, can have a real far-reaching impact to a number of projects that are sort of ongoing in all of these organizations.
Great. So can you give me the details one more time?
It's our third annual Capital Brewfest. It's Saturday, September 13th at the Jack. It's from 1 to 5, and tickets are $30 if you would like to be a beer taster, $5 if you're a designated driver, which we do support. And then you can buy your tickets at capbrewfest.com, and they do sell out. We have about 2.5 weeks to the event, so don't wait till the last minute because you might not get in.
And one last question. Which beers do you guys want to try the most?
That's such a tough question. Until the day of, you don't know exactly what's available, so those choices come on Christmas.
I'm going to say Alaskan Brewing Company. There's several beers that I would love to try of theirs.
Andy Klein is fist pumping outside the studio, folks.
Nice.
This one's for you guys. Beer by Sean Tracy.
Couple of years too young to appreciate you yet. We met up again at age 13. We finally got it on, if you know what I mean. I never will forget that fateful rowdy night. The phone call from the police really gave my folks a fright. From that evening on, we were best friends. And this is the story of how this love affair began. And her name was
Beer.
We met a long time ago.
Beer.
But I was too young to know
Beer.
That she'd be my best friend.
Beer.
We'd be together till the end.
Free beer.
You're my favorite kind.
Beer.
But I don't mind buying, I'd live on beer if I could, cause I never had anything so damn good. We were classic high school sweethearts, and we're still together now. You win my heart back every night, but I can't remember how. You like going strolling hand in hand, and I try to keep a firm grip on your little round can. And her name was
Beer.
We met a long time ago
Beer.
But I was too young to know
Beer.
That she'd be my best friend
Beer.
We'd be together till the end.
Free beer.
You're my favorite kind
Beer.
But I don't mind buying. I'd live on beer if I could.